views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to the Conscious Business Radio Network on Transformation Talk Radio. This show, called Funding Terrorism, who is funding them, how are they getting away with it, and why are they doing it? This show was originally planned before the terrible attack last week at the Belgium airport, but after that horrible incident, this issue seems even more critical to understand. Terrorism funding is an absolutely huge business that is haunting legitimate industries and citizens all over the world. The size of the entire black industry and laundered money through the world is estimated to be in the hundreds of billions and possibly over $1 trillion each year. In fact, if this industry were a country, it would be the 15th largest country in the world in GDP size behind Spain, which is absolutely huge. Of this pie, terrorism funding is a huge slice of that. What percentage of this slice is hard to know, according to our expert that's going to be joining us today, Amit Kumar. But what we do know is that it is a very large part of that equation, and it's a large part of the equation in multiple ways, because you will have drug funding or laundering of drug money, and that drug money is used to fund terrorism, or laundering of weapon money, and that weapon money, the weapons are used in terrorism. So there's a lot of elements to this thing. And today we're going to, like I said, we're going to have Amit Kumar join us, and he is an expert on the funding of terrorism, where it's coming from. He previously worked with Al-Qaeda and Taliban sanctions regime at the United Nations, where he offered substantial advice to Al-Qaeda and Taliban sanctions regimes on matters related to the implementation of assets freeze sanction measures against Al-Qaeda and Taliban, as well as issues relating to countering the financing of terrorism. He is the president of AAA International Security Consultants, LLC, and is widely recognized as a leading authority in international security, counterterrorism, and counterterrorist financing. And before we get into the interview with him, I want to tell you that we will have a very special tribute to the victims of terrorism around the world this episode. We are going to be featuring a special song originally composed just for the show by William Camilleri. And please listen to that. We'll be doing that between our first and second break. So I hope you enjoy the show, and let's welcome Amit Kumar to the program.
Hi, Amit. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sarah.
Well, I'm really glad you're here. We're going to talk about terrorism, and you are someone that we found that's an expert at how terrorism gets funded, and an expert on the Middle East and Asia, right, on the funding of the terrorism networks. But before we get into that, can you explain what is terrorism? I mean, is it just simply anybody who's against the state, or is there something that's discrete about terrorism?
Well, it's generally someone against the state, and many people conflate it with a tactic. Some call it a strategy. So the most important thing about terrorism is it doesn't have a universal definition. But generally, it is either the actual perpetration of violence or the threat of perpetration of violence against the state by elements opposed to the state, in some account, either political, religious, or otherwise.
And what are their goals usually?
Well, the goal is it could mean anything from regime change to scaring the daylights out of the people living in a certain territory to certain political objectives where they want to get rid of a certain head of state or head of government. So it varies from terrorist group to terrorist group. Even within the same terrorist group, it varies from one time to the other.
It, does it change depending on what country's definition of it? Like, does the United States view one terrorist group as a terrorist group versus another country not viewing it that way?
Yes, it does. It does vary from state to state because obviously the definition of the terrorism, there is no one global universal definition, though the UN has been trying to come add a definition for a long, long, long while. It doesn't seem like it's going to really be sticking to one definition because it varies from state to state. Sometimes one man's one country's terrorist is another country's freedom fighter, you know.
So exactly.
It varies, and many states don't designate or sanction or list all terrorist groups across the board. So, yeah, the answer to your question is yes.
Yes, it varies. So is terrorism a business made up of organized terrorist businesses? I mean, is there like a business network that supports terrorism?
Well, more and more, since terrorist groups need funding, they are comprising more like organized or petty criminal businesses as well, because they need to fund their terrorist financing cycle, which is nothing but raising money, moving money, and using money for terrorist purposes. So yes, it does run as a set of businesses. You can sort of describe a terrorist group as a set of businesses to the extent that these businesses are meant to either finance the terrorist group or be like any legitimate business are used to launder or hide the movement of terrorist funds from law enforcement authorities across countries.
So is it generally the wealthy and state governments that pay for terrorism, or is it profits from certain business activities? How is it really structured, or is it all of it?
Yeah, it's all of it. You did call out the various elements that fund it very well.
And so a combination of the wealthy people, governments, and certain businesses, the profits from certain industries. What is the most common industries that are funding the terrorism in the Middle East?
Well, there could be anything from drug trafficking in Afghanistan to artifact smuggling or illicit oil smuggling with ISIS in Iraq and Syria. So it varies from country to country. But yes, natural resources are used a lot to kind of finance terrorist activity across the board.
So would you define ISIS as a terrorist group, or is it a state-funded freedom fighter group?
I would describe ISIS as a serious terrorist group, yes.
Where are they getting their main funding?
Well, to begin with, it was stood up as an anti-Assad or an anti-Shia terrorist group by certain forces in the Middle East. But those were only setup costs. Now, it sustained itself by the illicit oil trade, where it launders oil out of Iraq and Syria. It also profits out of artifact smuggling and other crimes and so on and so forth. But yes, since it occupies a huge territory, it does really occupy a lot of resources, and it taxes the citizens of places or territories that it occupies. So it's beyond the startup costs. It's everyday running costs are through a number of sources. Yeah.
So basically, once it got past startup and they captured territory, they almost set up their own government structure because now they're taxing the people.
Yes.
Interesting. Now, who was the funding of their startup?
Well,
who provided that?
There's some elements from the Gulf states, I would say, that were basically involved in standing it up. And the ostensible reason of standing up ISIS was essentially to to take out assets. And assets, after all the 4 or 5 years that ISIS has been active, is still very much there. And it's
you mean Assad?
Yes, absolutely, Assad.
So they were specifically created to take out Assad, you think?
That is what my research, my sense tells me, yes.
And then you think it was specific Gulf states that funded them. Do you know which states funded it?
Well, there were some Gulf states. It's not really very clear whether states or certain elements within them. That much is not clear, actually, whether there's certain wealthy elements within them or their states per se. But my sense is generally the way these things happen, there are wealthy elements within these states that did fund ISIS, you know.
So basically, some of the Gulf states, they, not the entire state might, is for it, but certain divisions or certain departments within inside that state funnels money to it. It'd be like,
I wouldn't say even certain departments, I would say certain individuals.
Now, oh, certain individuals. Okay, and
well,
it would be, are they funneling?
Rich individuals who are very, very avowedly anti-Shia and anti-Assad.
Okay, so but would they be using their own money, or are they funneling state-based money with the back, kind of illegal ways to funnel black money, black budget money out of their state?
It could be either or, yeah.
Okay, and we do that in the United States, too. We have a whole bunch of black budgets. We don't know where that's being funneled.
Well, the I don't think we here really purposefully fund terrorism. It's just that the general creation of terrorist groups, and if you look at basically Afghanistan and the funding of Mujahideen was done to take out the Russians out of Afghanistan, and where they did succeed in sort of weeding them out of Afghanistan. And now it's another question that Afghanistan has gone through a lot of pain and anguish and a lot of terrorism. It's still going through it. So the ostensible slant of these terrorist groups, or their creation per se, is to take out certain either states, like in the Russian case, or states also like the Assad case, where a certain ideology or a certain slant or a certain kind of belief system needs to be taken out from certain states. And that's why terrorist groups are stood up and propped up.
So our goals are fairly, the United States goals are fairly aligned with what ISIS's goals as far as eliminating Assad is. So did they get, are we supporting that?
I don't think we are supporting ISIS. You know, ISIS is our enemy, as is evidenced by a lot of attacks, including on our shores here. Certain beheadings by ISIS or ISIS-inspired individuals. And when I say ISIS-inspired individuals, many people make this delineation between ISIS-inspired and actual ISIS members. Now, given the sick, distorted, evil ideology that ISIS propounds, I don't think there's much difference, and it's hard to nitpick. It's not proper to nitpick as to whether someone is a lone wolf, someone is ISIS-inspired, or someone is an ISIS member. In my scheme of things, in my understanding on the subject, whosoever either supports the ideology or acts on it or transmits messages to that end is an ISIS terrorist.
We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to play the piece of music that William Camilleri composed especially for this show today as a tribute to the victims of terrorism all over the world. As some of you may know, William Camilleri is a special composer. His life story just won the New York Film Festival Best Script. And they're doing a film on his life. It's in pre-production right now. It's an amazing story of strength and hope. His life story, he went into a coma and came out of his coma with this amazing gift to compose music. He was always a musician and a composer, but he came out with this extraordinary gift to compose music. So it'll be a special treat to be able to play his tribute. So we'll be back soon with the special song by William Camilleri.
What if we really didn't have to die to go to heaven? Are you curious about the afterlife or rebirth? The highly anticipated new book from author Dr. Susan Allison, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, is available now. Find out how to find guidance and healing in the spirit realms. Order the book today and put it on your must-read list for 2016. Visit drsusanallison.com to learn more.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Called the Oprah of radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and now I'm going to play this special tribute to terrorism victims all over the world by William Camilleri. hope you enjoyed that special piece of music by William Camilleri. We are now going to be rejoining our interview with Amit Kumar.
Well, why don't we ally with Assad then for the purposes of getting rid of ISIS?
Well, that's an interesting question, because obviously to us, Assad being in power is not a very, very cool thing, because ideologically Assad is allied with Iran, and we are not friendly with Iran. And it's another thing that the sanctions have come off in the last few months. So we are on one hand wanting to go against the Iranians. On the other hand, we are relaxing the sanctions. So I guess,
we don't even know what we're doing. We don't even have clear agenda for ourselves.
Yes. You don't know what we're doing ourselves, but it suffices to say that ISIS is a direct threat to us and to our way of living and to all our allies around the world, because ISIS ideology is really being transmitted far and wide through the internet, YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and so on and so forth. So it is a clear and present danger to the American way of life, to U.S., and to all our allies around the world.
Are they pretty much against all Western ideas and cultures, or are they against everybody that's not like them?
I would say both. Everybody who's not with them, as well as Western ideology, because ISIS is basically a successor of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which was set up by Zarqawi way back in the early 2000s, post-Iraq invasion. So ISIS is basically a successor of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and Al-Qaeda's premise is basically twofold. One, against the U.S. and its allies in the Western way of living, and the other is, of course, anyone who doesn't subscribe to the rather radical interpretation of their religious ideology.
Well, how does the money flow to them, and can we track it? I mean, because if we can figure out who's funding them, you cut off their money supplies, and that's how you win, because they wither and die.
Well, we could, because typically there are four ways of countering the financial imperialism, ISIS or otherwise, and that those are basically through sanctions. We've done a lot of that in the UN and through the Office of Foreign Affairs Control, OFAC, here. Then there are investigations and enforcement. We've not been very successful there, but we try, I guess. Then there is regulation. We have the U.S. Patriot Act Title III, which takes care of terrorist financing. Or what is the main anti-money laundering, countering the financial terrorism tool, regulatory legal tool that we have? And the last is outreach, which we do through our partners bilaterally and through the Financial Action Task Force, which is the international outreach. So we have the, it's really hard to trace them because the way that the illicit oil proceeds are laundered, that sort of takes place through states around in Iraq and Syria, including Turkey. And we aren't very successful in spotting them, really. Though we've tried, and there are certain headways by quarantining banks based in Iraq and Syria from the international financial system. So there has been some headway, but the fact that this terrorist group occupies huge swaths of territory within Iraq and Syria, and the fact that there are certain criminal elements evil people around in the other states around Iraq and Syria, like Turkey, who sort of give them the oxygen through laundering their funds.
Well, they get discounts, right? They can get oil for lower prices, so they're like,
absolutely,
we don't care if we can
black
get
market.
Yeah, if we can get the oil for 40% less than what we have to pay regularly, then we'll do this and we'll
absolutely,
help you.
Absolutely, absolutely, and that. That goes back to the point you raised earlier about whether there's a business to us. This is a pretty shady, seedy, illicit criminal business where all these oil smugglers are really having a field day. And of course, ISIS also ostensibly supplies oil to the Syrian regime of Assad as well. So they may be complicit in sort of ISIS laundering the proceeds and sustaining itself through the illicit oil smuggling trade.
Is this one of the reasons why the oil price needs to stay low? Because if the oil prices go up, then we're just funding, they're getting a lot more funding?
Not really. The reason for oil prices being low are a number of other reasons.
Yeah, I know that, but I'm wondering if it's another factor.
Not directly linked to the ISIS oil smuggling venture, really.
Interesting. Okay, so if they're taxing the local people in that big territory that they have, are the local people supportive of this, or are they very frustrated? I mean, is ISIS taking care of them, or are they using all the tax money to fight the war that they have going on?
ISIS ostensibly does take care of them because we haven't seen the kind of Sunni awakening that we saw in 2007-2008 against Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which General Petraeus really managed to admirably. But I would say that they are caring enough for or scaring really the daylights out of the population that they govern to really not let the population revolt in any big way like they did with the Sunni awakening in Iraq in 2007-2008.
Well, how do they collect tax money? Do they just go door to door and collect taxes? Or is it just part of they took over the government and the normal tax system?
Well,
they took
generally
over?
It's through extortion, I would say.
So basically they go door to door and say, give me half your money, or
That is kind of my understanding.
Where
they extort money out of their subjects, which has been done by many, many dictators and many kingdoms in the past. So it's nothing new, really.
Oh, really? They're used to this. Yeah. They're used to whoever's leading their country to knock door to door and just take whatever money they need.
Yes, I would guess so.
Wow. So we just have to realize how fortunate we are here that even though we're all mad about all our taxes, we at least don't have somebody knocking on our door and saying, give me all your money or half your money.
Yes, yes. Though I guess given the presidential season and the flavor of the season is really to really curb the powers of the IRS. And that's never going to be possible, really. Because, you know, we sort of live in a civilized democracy, where there are certain rules and there's a rule of law and there's a constitution and there are constitutional checks and balances. Now, the people in Iraq and Syria, unfortunately, under ISIS, can't even know what a constitution is or what living in a free democracy is like, you know.
They don't understand it. That's why
you
don't get the support of it necessarily, because they just don't understand it, right? It's they haven't lived it. So what other terrorist groups besides ISIS are the most concerning right now?
Well, there is the Taliban in Afghanistan whose heinous tactics haven't abated at all, despite all the blood and treasure we've invested and our allies have invested over the last 15 years since we entered Afghanistan, and we're still there in some semblance. Then there is the Lashkar-e-Taiba, there is the Jaish-e-Mohammed, which is active in Pakistan, Afghanistan, and India, as evidenced by the Mumbai attacks by Lashkar-e-Taiba, the recent Pathankot Air Force Base attacks by Jaish-e-Mohammed in India, and other attacks by Lashkar-e-Taiba in India. So those are two that are important. And there's Al-Shabaab in Somalia also. There is the Boko Haram in Nigeria. So these are basically some of the groups that are really active.
How is the Taliban funded now?
The Taliban is funded as it was earlier through the illicit drug trade, through extortion, through taxing, and through some support again from some wealthy patrons in the Gulf states. So it's a mix again, yeah.
Well, heroin is a major problem, right? So do they get a lot of their funding? Because when they took over Afghanistan, they actually shut down the heroin trade. But now it's absolutely booming.
Yes, it's booming, really, because it's too lucrative, you know. At the end, they may be barbaric, but they are men, and men are greedy, you know. So the power of lucre really drives that terrorist movement.
Well, they need money, and it's a source of money, and so they let that
happen. Yeah, and of course, there is a there is a so-called competition between ISIS and Taliban in Afghanistan. So there are different stories. It's the fact that ISIS is making inroads into Taliban territory, and there are daggers drawn. But I always like to pluck terrorist groups as terrorist groups, one and all, all in sundry. So if the terrorism manages convenience or there is some kind of an adversarial relationship, it's hard to really see it because, yeah, basically it'd be the Taliban cadre, the Thani network, the Afghan Taliban, etc., along the South Asian terrorist groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba and Jaish-e-Mohammed, that will be really, really active across India, Pakistan, and Afghanistan.
Okay, so the ones that are in South India, what are their goals? What's the deal with them?
Well, the goals are really to spread unrest and disquiet in India, ostensibly raising the Kashmir issue, but the reality is that India's Western neighbor is always up to playing some pranks. To the extent that these terrorist groups may be getting some state support as well.
From Pakistan?
Or again, elements within the rich patrons from the Gulf, you know. So it's hard because, you know, states are getting smarter. They don't directly, as you mentioned earlier, they don't directly contribute funds, but they may route the funds through these wealthy patrons or the wealthy patrons, thanks to their religious zeal, or certain political power may want to give funds to certain terrorist groups. So it's hard to really say. And then there is the kind of, more and more across the world, there is the reliance on local criminal sources also. But yes, the ideologically driven terrorist comes through some semblance of state support, either directly or indirectly.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world-renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the maca team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing. All of the products are always organically grown, fair-traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation. But did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Badili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's ATANAMethod.com. And sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune in to Sheer Alchemy with Leslie Fontaine on TransformationTalkRadio.com and get ready to stir up your passions, remove your blocks, and shift into an entirely new existence. Speaker, teacher, channel, clairvoyant, Leslie Fontaine is a transformation catalyst who channels a powerful energy from Source to catapult listeners into living the life they were born to live. Whether it's shifting from scarcity to abundance, from emotional pain into joy, or from illness into health, Leslie will help you step into the true essence and power of all that you are with the help of the Ascended Masters and Archangels. You will not be the same. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for show dates and times and LeslieFontaine.com to say yes to explosive abundance.
Tune in to the Angels and Answers Psychic Radio Show with clairvoyants Artie Hoffman and Sky Siegel every Thursday for a two-hour show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Artie and Sky deliver spiritual and motivational messages with passion and a sense of humor. Call in 800-930-2819 for live and on-air readings. Visit ArtieHoffman.com and SkyOfAngels.com.
And we are back with Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we will be rejoining our interview with Amit Kumar and funding terrorism now.
Well, is this the way that these states are fighting wars now? Because the United States and the Western allies have so much power that no one really wants to do a formal war against them. So instead of doing a formal war, they fund terrorism under the table, and this is the new state of warfare?
Well, it's not really. Again, I don't think that the U.S. Or its allies purposefully are involved in financing these terrorists.
No. Not the allies, because the West and the allies are so powerful that anybody that's against the West, they don't want to do a formal war and state that they're doing a war. Instead, they fund terrorism and terrorist groups and fight wars that way.
Yes, because this is a long, dreary war, and it's a war of attrition, as evidenced in Afghanistan, with both the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda alliance, and as evidenced with ISIS, because they want to wear the West down, the U.S. and its allies down, through a war of attrition, through depleting its economic resources, in sort of trying to blunt its military might. And that's why, since they don't, they are incapable of launching a whole hog war. This is war by other means, in terms of ecologically and financially, and really using the either terrorist act or threat of terrorism to scare the populations of the U.S. And its allies. Yes.
Why would they be so vicious and cruel, chopping off heads and things like that, if they're trying to make a regime change and things like that? Because all they're going to do is turn everybody against them.
Yes, they do, but like I said, the threat of violence or actual display of violence really motivates their cadres and really recruits more and more people. Because they don't really care much about the populations that are their subjects, really. But they want to recruit more and more and spread fear and dread amongst their potential followers and their potential recruits across the globe. And now, thanks to the aid of the Internet and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and so-called dark web, there is more and more possibility of people across the globe that may subscribe to them. And they do. They are subscribing to the vicious ideology, as evidenced by the Paris attack or the Oklahoma beheadings or the Brussels shootout recently or any other attack.
So basically they want to look like they have power. They want to put themselves in a position of power. But, you know, from what I understand, a lot of their propaganda videos almost looks like a family-oriented network. Is that wrong? I mean, from what I've heard is that some of their stuff is like a family oriented, you know, brotherhood kind of thing.
Well, it is, in a sense that they're looking for the brother, I wouldn't say brother really, but they're looking for like-minded ideological zealots, kind of religious zealots who have a distorted extremist ideology across, the globe. And they're looking for those foot soldiers to act in their respective countries.
Sure.
And that's what sort of facilitates the spread of their heinous ideology and the perpetration of terrorist acts, because you don't really need a central hub like the Al-Qaeda network, which is called the base, really, under Bin Laden, to really order its foot soldiers to go and attack region A, B, C, like they did before 9/11 until 9/11. So these days, thanks to the Internet, thanks to cells and affiliates that are more localized, they can use local recruits to give A, the surprise element of attack, and B, logistically, it's much more convenient for the terrorist group, ISIS, for example, or Al-Qaeda at large, to really perpetrate these acts through either lone wolves or cells or their local affiliates.
So do you think that conflict is fueled on purpose? at times to create chaos, to help sell weapons, to create more opportunities for business?
Well, it's difficult to say what the purpose of conflict is. I would generally stick to the point that there is, you know, changing regimes, really. Overthrowing regimes has been the main reason. If you look at two major terrorist groups, the Mujahideen, the Taliban, and the Al-Qaeda in the Afghan war were really supposed to take out the Soviets, which they did. And then to take out the Assad regime in Syria, ISIS was really stood up by elements that were ideologically opposed to them. So I think it ends up being a sectarian war by other means, because obviously it's hard to imagine 6-7 states surrounding Iraq and Syria going out to an all-out war against Assad, you know, because Assad does have its allies like the Iranians, for example.
Why are they so anti-Assad when Assad's country was fairly peaceful? It really didn't do much. Why was Assad suddenly the target?
Well, it's just that Assad was aligned with Iran, and he still is. And obviously Assad is also aligned with the Russians, which he still is.
But why would the terrorist groups care?
Well, the terrorist groups...
I can see why the United States would care, but why would the terrorist groups care?
Well, the terrorist group was supposed to care, and like I mentioned earlier, the partnership in terms of the illicit oil trade with the Assad regime was supposed to care, but it didn't care enough to really wear down Assad. What they ended up doing, the ISIS guys, are to control large swaths of territory between Iraq and Syria. They didn't really go and take down the Assad regime, so probably the motivations changed, and they were having a pretty good time, but they still are, at illicitly smuggling artifacts, or illicitly smuggling oil, or enjoying the rule over lots of water territory, much like the Taliban have been used to from 96 to 2001, till we guys really went after them in 2001, November, December. And we really overthrew them.
Yeah,
and
the Taliban was a pretty creepy organization.
Yes, it was, and it still is. And we really don't know what the upshot of the war in Afghanistan is going to be. Still, it's a very, very tricky place, and there is always the danger of either ISIS stepping in or Al Qaeda really regenerating itself with the Taliban in tow. Really, so
I was going to say, war just creates more anger and more radical people, because people lose everyone in their family and they just go crazy. And so you have all these crazy people trying to just fight for their lives and do whatever. I mean, that's what war creates. So I would assume Afghanistan could be a problem for until this generation flushes itself out. Decades.
Absolutely. In Afghanistan, since the Soviet invasion in 1979, has been like that. It's a very, very difficult country to govern, and we've tried to do the most we can, but I think our efforts are falling short too, and that's why we haven't completely disengaged from Afghanistan, which we should not, because you look at what we did post-Soviet invasion in Afghanistan. The end of Soviet invasion in 1988 was we just left Afghanistan to its own contrivances, and look what happened. The Taliban came to power, 9/11 happened, the Taliban gave shelter to Al-Qaeda, so we don't want to be repeating that mistake. So moving out of Afghanistan and creating a very huge power vacuum and leaving the rather weakish Afghan administration to the contrivances of Al-Qaeda and Taliban and ISIS now, it's going to be fraught with a lot of danger, and I think our own interests and the interests of our allies in South Asia and beyond will be threatened if we totally disengage from Afghanistan, because, you know, history has a tendency of repeating itself.
Well, because you have all these fanatical people now, and what are you going to do? You have to at least kind of watch over that and make sure it doesn't explode. Well, do you think the mainland of the United States is at a higher risk currently? I mean, where do we stand? I know we're fairly isolated with oceans, but, you know, we have the two borders that a lot of the political, you know, the presidential candidates are talking about right now. And a lot of the weapons, certain countries, North Korea for one, has weapons that can make it to the mainland and suitcase bombs and all those kinds of things. So how at risk is the United States mainland? And is there a lot of money being funneled into terrorists to target us?
Yeah, the answer is yes. We are at a high risk to terrorists and terrorism for all the reasons that you mentioned. Because we have enemies. North Korea is just one. We have the Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, the ISIS, and you run the other fundamentalist groups with rather extremist terrorist ideologies that really are after us. Because, you know, one of the, I'm just harking back to what I said earlier, one of the goals of Al-Qaeda was to really attack the West, the U.S., the West, its allies, and that it stands for, and also all the regimes that it's been supporting over the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years. So anything where U.S. interests are, the terrorist interests across groups are very much anti-U.S. So we are, I would say, for all the reasons that you mentioned and then I mentioned, we are at a high risk. So we can't be complacent, you know, and see what happened with Oklahoma bombings, what happened in Ottawa, we and our allies, what happened in France, Paris, it's heinous. So we can't take down our guard, and we can't conflate the killing of Bin Laden with the demise of Al Qaeda, because we've seen time in and time out that just killing the head of an organization where its movement or its ideology, which is so vicious, is so fast gaining ground across the globe, we can't really be complacent and just sort of sit on our heads and say, fine, and we've killed Bin Laden, now we're free of any terror. This is going to be a lingering problem for a generation or more. Yeah.
Well, does it make it that much more important for us to just stamp out corruption and black market activities and do, I mean, even in our country, because that's where corruption flows, right? And we have to be careful with our policies, because our policies can create just a huge black market.
Yes, our policies do. Corruption
worldwide.
Is important. Yeah, they do, but the thing is, ideology is something that is funded through funds, but also this is an ideology which is not really endemic to the U.S. as such. This is a cruel ideology. I'm just talking about ISIS, for example, or Al-Qaeda. That, thanks to the internet and modern technologies and modern payment systems and so on and so forth, is pretty rampant across the globe. So we might try to curb corruption. We may try to make sure that our money is well spent. But given the fact, and that's where I come to the discussion of terrorist financing versus money laundering. Terrorist financing is funded in relatively smaller amounts. It's more difficult to trace, whereas money laundering is huge. So trying to find terrorist financing within the sea of money laundering is just like finding a needle in a haystack.
Do you want the freedom to spend more time with your loved ones? Travel the world? Live spontaneously? Get ready, because the Chip Justice Show is here. Hosts Dr. Pat Basile and Chip Justice can help you build meaningful success while embracing life. Living a life you love is the end game in this new, inspirational, and empowering show. Positive changes for a life you'll love. Tune in every month on TransformationTalkRadio.com and visit PositiveChangeInstitute.co for more information.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Shine Shine On Radio. Find Your Shine with Kelly is the show that celebrates what makes you, you. Join co-hosts Kelly Wadler and Dr. Pat Basile as they break down how to brilliantly fuel and move your body and love what makes you shine. Kelly is a professional arts and wellness coach dedicated to helping brilliant women find their confidence, energy, self-love, and shine. Tune in to Shine On Radio with Kelly and find your shine on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
What are vibes? We often use this word, but did you know vibes can actually be useful and help solve our everyday challenges? Embark on an exciting learning journey with Caitlin Keat, 11-time Visionary Award winner, specialist in vibrational energy, and the creator of Vibes Up. Join Caitlin as she takes you through the world of vibrational therapy and energy healing with natural solutions for a modern world. Visit vibesup.com to learn more today.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
We are back. This is Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Business Game Changers. We are rejoining our conversation with Amit Kumar.
Now, whether this money is going towards criminal activity or it's going towards terrorist financing, it's difficult to say. So I would say yes, that would help. But given the fact that terrorists are illogically motivated and the fact that they were laundered funds back to the terrorist acts and towards terrorist organizations, whereas the criminal is pretty happy laundering funds to make them come back in the illicit economy.
Well, there's plenty of people that'll launder money. That's the problem. I mean, we have there's plenty of companies that position themselves as ultra ethical and, you know, the pillar of society who will gladly launder money. So it's really difficult to, you know, crack down on that.
Yes, it's difficult to crack down on that because launderers have a pretty ingenious and a clever way of using their funds and in creating barriers between how funds come in and how they go, you know, disguising the source of funds from their origin and vice versa, or disguising the destination of funds from their sources or origins is what launderers do very well. And launderers want to bring all this illicit money in some jurisdictions. It's even called black money because it's not transparent, or it's the underground economy. They want to bring this back to the realm of illicit financial activity, whereas the terrorists don't want to do that. They want to launder those funds, hide it from the snooping eyes of the law enforcement, and use them, canalize them towards used by terrorist organizations and to perpetrate terrorist acts for recruitment, training, media management, and so on and so forth. You know, the general understanding of terrorist financing was, oh, you know, it takes $500,000 to perpetrate 9/11. If you look at the real costs of setting up the enterprise, and of training, recruitment, travel, motivation, and media management, the costs of terrorist financing are a small fraction of the costs entailed in making it, in establishing and running a very successful terrorist enterprise. So, so it's hard to really stem terrorist funds. You know, we can make so many measures like the International Financial Action Task Force, or guidelines or standards that countries are expected to adhere to. But terrorists, like money launderers, are pretty smart, and they always outwit or baffle the law enforcement authorities and the anti-terrorist agencies, really, and they keep on perpetrating acts. I mean,
I suppose it's like the drug trade. It's if there's enough money in it, even the authorities, you can pay off certain people everywhere.
Yes.
And that makes it hard. You don't know who's good, who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. Well, how large?
Yes. Much like General Petraeus said that there is no good Taliban, there is no bad Taliban. So you can't really negotiate with one and hope, because you can't really trust terrorist groups. You know, they have, as we've been discussing throughout, this interview, different motivations and they have different, objectives. And it's hard to really comprehend what they mean. I mean, we've been trying to talk to the Taliban for many, many years now, but things haven't really worked because the Afghan authorities don't really, they should not trust the Taliban because they've been victims of Taliban attacks for the last 20 years or so. And it's hard for any state per se, the U.S., its allies, Afghanistan, to really talk to terrorists. So negotiating with the terrorists may be construed as a sign of weakness. So it's difficult to trust them because they have these different agendas, which is difficult for nation states like us to really comprehend.
Well, nobody trusts anybody, and our cultures are so different, we just completely disconnect. So it's very, very difficult. Well, how big is the terrorism market? I mean, how much money are we talking about?
It's hard to really quantify it because of the basic reason that I said. The money laundering trade runs into tens to hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe some trillions of dollars. But what proportion of that terrorist financing covers, it's difficult to say. It's hard to put really numbers to terrorist financing activity. Laundering is much easily kind of quantified compared to terrorist financing. My guess would be lots. So it's difficult to trace it. It's difficult to prove it because very few nation states have very clear laws to adequately criminalize terrorist financing.
Well, so would you say that laundering is perhaps hundreds of billions up to maybe over $1 trillion just on money, laundering. And that is for illegal activities like drug trade, black market stuff, pharmaceuticals, whatever. But terrorism is a chunk of that, which could be, you know, a third of that or something.
No, it's difficult to put numbers again.
You don't know.
It's difficult to quantify and trace. So I wouldn't hazard any guesses as to precise numbers, but I would say substantive because, you know, for the reasons neither terrorism nor terrorist financing is adequately criminalized to the extent that we don't even have a universal definition of what terrorism is. So to that extent, it's difficult to trace, to recognize, to prosecute, and there are very few prosecutions or convictions worldwide for terrorist financing. Because of the basic reason that the laws don't really adequately criminalize, and then many jurisdictions don't really know how to prosecute or to gain convictions in terrorist financing because of the fact that it's difficult to identify, trace, and quantify.
Well, and a lot of the stuff they buy is just normal stuff, right? I mean, it's buying the weapons and things are different. But where are they getting so many of those weapons from? Wars that have been fought and weapons abandoned, things like that?
Yes. Like in Afghanistan and Iraq, we had left tens of billions of dollars worth of equipment with the Afghanis first after 1998 when we withdrew from Soviet Union and then with the Iraqis.
Why would we leave so much equipment? So basically so much is just leftover equipment because we weren't smart enough to get it out of there. But do they have access to other weapons as well? I would assume there's a huge underground black market for weapons.
Yes, they have access to other weapons through the black market or through certain elements within states around them. Where they may be getting weapons.
The state might be buying it with legitimate means, but yet there's a couple individuals in that state that is funneling it, you know, undercover or whatever.
I would say it's because the states typically want to detach themselves from openly even ostensibly funding their elements within them, either allied to the state or otherwise. You know, there may be certain people who may be zealots, really, who have a certain ideology, they want to bring down a certain Assad regime, for example, or want to bring down a certain Russian regime. And there may be elements who may be allied with the states. I don't think states openly would do that. You know?
Well, they don't openly do it, but that's their way to fight right now. I mean, we talked about that earlier because they don't want to openly go against the West because they're so powerful, so they do it this way.
Yeah.
So where do you see the future of terrorism? I mean, where is it just going to keep getting bigger because of that phenomena that they don't want to formally fight wars because of the power of the West and its allies, so they're fighting wars this way? So is it just going to keep growing?
Well, for that reason, as well as the business element or the element of lucre or greed, because a lot of these...
There's a lot of money in this.
Yeah, whether it's FARC in Colombia, they've profited and they keep on profiting considerably out of the cocaine trade or drug trafficking trade in Colombia, or the Afghan Taliban, or the Taliban in general through what they do in Afghanistan, or ISIS, what they do with oil and with the artifacts, really. So it's difficult to really see or predict when terrorism would end. We would all be happier for it. But I think for the next generation and a half or two, through all our lives, I think it's going to, unfortunately, I hate saying it, but it's going to be lasting for many, many reasons, some of whom, which we've discussed. But there may be other reasons, because certain terrorist groups may wax and wane in terms of their terrorist activity. You know, they may be lying quiescent for a while, and they may be just kind of ratcheting up their terrorist activity when it suits them. So it's hard to tame terrorist groups. It's hard to tame terrorist financing. We've done a lot by way of policy measures. We've done a lot by way of the international financial system. But given the prevalence of terrorist financing and terrorism, and all the measures that we have do not have any very clean and neat and clear impact metrics or implementation metrics. What's the degree of implementation of a certain countering financing of terrorism measure? What's the impact of that measure? That the Financial Action Task Force has recently come to really bring within its ambit of discussion. And I've been writing about this for many years now, that impact and implementation is really important, you know.
So we need to know what we do and whether it's working or not.
Yes, absolutely. Because we've been spending trillions of dollars on this, on wars and measures through the UN and the Financial Action Task Force, and through beefing up the counterterrorism capacities of our allies across the globe. But in the end, it's the American taxpayer, or any of the taxpayer that funds.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I'm tired of funding it.
Yes.
I mean, it's not funny, but, you know, we only have a certain amount of money and we have a lot of issues here. So
we
really, but with the upwards of trillions being laundered, I mean, we clearly have a major issue just with black market activities in general, of which terrorism is a big part. Where can people see more of your work?
Well, as you know, I'm the president of AAA International Security Consultants LLC. So they could go to my website and look up some of the stuff that I've done at www.internationalsecurityconsultants.com. I repeat, www.internationalsecurityconsultants.com.
Well, I will definitely put your information up on the radio page, and people can figure out how to get hold of you there. You're just a wealth of information. So I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. It's a great opportunity, and thank you for your length and breadth of questions. You did run through, in a very, very fast crash course, as it were, almost the entire gamut of terrorism. And that's asking for too much in one show. You've done wonderfully well. You asked me such searching questions, and that only shows how much research and how much preparation to do you do to make your show what it is and how good it gets, you know.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you.
Well, I hope you learned something and enjoyed that interview with Amit Kumar. And if you want to hear this episode again or any of my past episodes, you can go to sarahwestall.com, and they're all up there, including any contact information from our past guests. So for now, I hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.